Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, our audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me. I know some people have been asking. We will have a football podcast later on this week. We are going to do one more basketball one just because the news is a little bit more hot. If the Michigan football team had opened a spring game or given us something to talk about, then yes, that would be the hot news. But this is going to be an episode about basketball and kind of the off season, which is arguably going to be the biggest off season or busiest off season, at least in college basketball history. Later on this week, you can expect, I'll see how exactly we slice it, but it's going to essentially be a things we learned from spring practice, combining a little bit of the inside intel with what we learned in interviews. So it should be a fun episode for those who want the football stuff, but for those who want the basketball, well, keep listening. Because there's a lot going on. You can read all of our stories over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan.247sports.com. Gone in depth on this stuff. I had a breakdown of kind of an early guess and also the pros and cons of seven different Michigan players staying or going. And then today I did since some players are choosing to go, I did a breakdown of the, well, I don't even remember how many it was, eight or nine transfer targets that kind of stood out to me as guys Michigan might go after. In this episode, we're going to kind of flesh those two things together. We're going to look at each position, look at who might stay, who might go, how well-equipped Michigan's incoming freshman class is to replace the players that are departing, and then also kind of assess how important it is for Michigan to get a transfer at each position. So let's start at the one that's probably the busiest right now, and that is point guard. So departing Mike Smith, incoming Frankie Collins. You could also maybe play Zeb. I mean, Zeb Jackson has played point guard throughout his high school career. I know he's more of a two guard last season, but Steve, I guess first, I guess we could start with the transfer portal. That's probably the most pressing question people want to know. I think this is the most important position for Michigan to get a transfer. This isn't a dig on Frankie Collins, who I believe is number 51 in the 2021 24/7 sports composite. Seems like a really, really, really good offensive point guard. It's hard to tell since I'm mainly resigned to highlight reels. It's hard to tell exactly how good he'll be on defense or how quickly he'll be at a college level of defense, but seems like a really good player. I still think, similar to last season, they need experience at that position. They need someone who has done it before. Juwan Howard doesn't coach the point guards quite as, the playbook isn't quite as thick as John Beilein's was for the point guard, and the reliance on that position isn't quite as high under Juwan Howard, but it's still pretty high. I mean, Mike Smith came in and did a lot. And I don't think it's quite as dire because I do think Frankie Collins is a little bit more college ready to run point than Zeb Jackson was last season. But if you are Michigan, the only player you know who can play point that is on the team is Frankie Collins. Now we'll see. We'll talk about Eli Brooks a little bit more in a moment. But with Mike Smith moving on, which frankly, I mean, I think he turns 24 in October. I understand. I think he has 2 degrees, one from Columbia, one from Michigan. I can see where he might be ready to give it his best shot in the pros. But with Mike Smith moving on, how important, maybe like a 1 to 10 gauge, is it for Michigan to get a transfer at the point guard position?
I mean, what, 8, 9? I'm with you all the way about it being the most important position, because point guard is
arguably the most important position as far as tournament runs and winning things goes. It's the straw that stirs the drink for everybody else. So to, you know, and again, and it's funny because I say this as thinking like Frankie Collins is my favorite player to watch in this class for them. I think, like you said, I think he'll get there defensively. He does have to work on his outside game a little bit. I think he's a little questionable from the outside, but explosive, just a really fun player to watch, you know, and as a guy, I think is going to be a great player at some point. But even if like you can't, like it's not something you want to put all your chips in for this next season. You know, you at the very least, you have to bring somebody in, you know, with as many names that are in the portal now. I think you're in a position, especially if you're Michigan, you can get a guy that could come right in and come and play right away and be an impact guy. They may be able to get somebody that may be better than Mike Smith was for him. Really, I mean, that's how many names and players there are out there. And that's with Smith making a much bigger impact than I think we thought he would when he first committed. But yeah, despite all of Collins' talent, you need more there. And that's even if Eli Brooks was to come back, even then. Because I think best case scenario, you want Brooks playing the same spot he was last year.
Right.
Yeah. Right. You know, although, I mean, you could argue depending on if, you know, because there are a lot of good twos out there also in the portal. I mean, Michigan does have options in that regard. But think you'd like to find a true point guard to at the very least maybe groom Collins or give Collins a little more time to maybe seize that job later in the season or, you know, however, but absolutely is it the most important spot for them. I don't even think it's close.
Yeah. And the other thing is, and I don't mean, again, this isn't meant to be a slight at the recruits, but the evaluations this year or this past recruiting cycle, they're going to be as variant as they've ever been. I think, I don't know if I would describe it as the recruiting services are going to miss a lot of guys. I mean, the fact is without AAU ball last summer and with so many different schools and states having different high school schedules, this is a very tricky year to gauge what someone's going to look like in year one on a college campus. And so Frankie Collins, my assumption is that he arrives in June. I mean, that's not enough time for Michigan to know by the time they need to like really get a transfer solidified. That's not enough time over the summer for them to know if Frankie Collins is going to be the guy. So, I mean, part of it is you also want to kind of hedge yourself a little bit in the sense where you're like, well, hey, two point guards who can probably play is a lot better than one. And I will say, to your point about the straw stirring the drink, I don't think anybody would say Mike Smith was Michigan's best player this season. But what on earth would this team look like without him? I don't think that they are winning the Big Ten. I don't think they're a one seed. And I don't think they're going to the Elite Eight. So first of all, I mean, in some sense, hats off to Mike Smith for making it look really easy to come in and learn a new offense and, you know, build chemistry with a new set of teammates, you know, play at a different level of basketball as well as he did, led the Big Ten in assists. But yeah, it's I think it's paramount. And so actually when I did the transfer, look, I'm with you, Steve. There's a lot of two guards, a few three guards that are really good as well, but it was mostly guys who I thought could maybe play point or at least play guard, you know, one or with a one or the two to help give them a little bit of a rotation in there. So looking at the transfer targets, I didn't put them in a strict order, but one thing to your point about, is there someone better than Mike Smith? I don't know if there's a better fit than Mike Smith, but also you don't know that at this stage in the game, but there are players who were legitimate starters on Power 5 teams at guard who are in this portal. Adam Miller from Illinois, obviously Michigan, someone Michigan was interested in late in the recruiting cycle last year. Started every game for the Illini, averaged 8.2 points. He's in the portal. That will be a very interesting transfer saga because I think he's one of the more surprising players to enter the portal this cycle. Jacob Young from Rutgers. This would be his sixth season in college. He played two at Texas, sat out a year to transfer, played two at Rutgers. Had a pretty good season, 14.1 points, 1.9 rebounds, 3.4 assists, and I think he was in the top five in the Big Ten in steals, if I'm not mistaken. Marcus Carr, kind of feel like Michigan's not going to wait because I assume Carr is going to give the NBA as hard of a look as any transfer. But obviously he can play. He can play in the Big Ten, can do an awful lot, 4.9 assists per game, 19.4 points per game. Mac McClung entered the portal last night. I think it's still too early to see what he's thinking. Another guy who probably could look harder at the NBA, but start at Texas Tech. Matt Bradley from Cal. Kind of played a little bit more of a Sean D. Brown type of role, but is able to play points if he needed. Rasir Bolton, Iowa State. Jalen Pickett from Siena, I think, is someone that our message board is very interested in. Three-time all Metro Atlantic conference player, won the player of the year, led the league in assists 3 years in a row, 6'4" from the Albany area. Couple other guys, but Steve, anyone really jump out to you as someone, if you were in Juwan Howard's shoes, X player is your first phone call, anyone or any particular trait you're looking for? Cause this portal, I mean, players are going to be entering every single day. Anyone really jump out at you or any traits you're looking for?
I mean, Miller just seems like the natural first option, at least, doesn't he? Just because of
how hard... listed him as it. Yeah.
No. I know. I'm just saying.
I'm in agreement because, I mean, he's from Chicago, played high school ball 3 miles from where Juwan Howard grew up.
Right. They recruited the hell out of him.
There was mutual interest. They came in super late in the process, at least my recollection is.
Yes.
He answered the phone.
Yep. They almost, like, they were in it. And like you said, came in last minute. I mean, he's a guy that with Dasunmu, I mean, I don't know if they've, any of those guys have officially, like Dasunmu hasn't officially announced, but I can't see him coming back to Illinois.
I think he has.
Oh, did he already? Okay.
I think he did. Kofi is not, but.
But, I mean, this is a guy, if you were an Illinois fan, you were probably counting on 15 points a game next year, right? I mean, like, that's, he's a big impact kind of player. And so, just a fit for a lot of different reasons, you know, that regard. I guess the only, the question may be, he'd be the same number level option for Michigan that he was last year for Illinois. You know, maybe he's a guy looking for to be that number one or number two guy, but also that begs the question, why leave Illinois in the first place then? At worst would have been their third option, probably second if Kofi leaves, you know, with Curbelo. So he seems like the natural fit. I did see the buzz on our board about Pickett. That's another one that has a lot of Mike Smith to it.
Mm-hmm. You know, that, but he's 6'4". So.
Right. Well, which might, that's a fascinating, you know, maybe makes him more, you know, higher ceiling. So I saw your article, which, well done. Great article. Good insight on that. As a guy, like, the question really is, could he play defense at this level? And that was a question with Mike Smith. You know, I thought Mike Smith got a lot better as the season went on. Not a guy I'd say
he was a willing defender for right, sure.
Not a stopper, but he was far better defensively than I think we anticipated he would be based on even just watching him, watching his stuff at Columbia, right? I mean, he just really took his game to the next level in that regard. So those are really the two. And McClung just doesn't feel like a guy. I don't know. But this is where it's like different now. Michigan is a destination now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's where it's like a little bit different as far as, like, I think for a transfer situation, Michigan can go toe to toe with Kentucky and some of these other programs because the success is there on the court and the success in, you know, what they did with both Brown and Smith. is not going to, it's going to help them. You know, it's like to say like, hey, like, you know, Mike Smith might play professional ball now because of what he did for us in this 1 year, where he may not have, if he had just graduated from Columbia and gone right to try to go pro, you know, out of the Ivy League. So that's one area where I think it'll be interesting, but it does, it feels like, you talk about a 180. I mean, it's just Michigan recruited well under John Beilein, but it just feels like now they're like much more in that, like, you know, the conversation. Maybe they wouldn't have let like a, well, I guess Josh Christopher committed, you know, they did lose a couple guys, but they just feel like a destination, like a blue blood level recruiting power right now. And I think that's going to help them in these situations, as you figure most of these guys that are leaving are looking for, I think the pros is always the primary driver here, right? That's why you find a better fit to make yourself look more attractive for when you go to play professionally. And it's hard to argue with Michigan, you know, Howard's experience, all the same stuff that helped him sign the top recruiting class, you know, will help them with this transfer situation.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think Michigan is a destination because they have a really likable coach. There is proof in winning. And I think every time Michigan has a completely different roster that makes a run or hangs a banner or is a top five team, because I think this is the third team since 2013 that has finished in the top five in the postseason polls, like after the tournament. So even though they didn't make the Final Four, they were voted number four in that postseason coaches poll. And suddenly you're just a power that does this with regularity. It's not a good group of players that came and helped your program. It's becoming cyclical. So I agree. They're a destination in a lot of ways. I think a couple things that will hurt them and might hurt them in with some of these star players, like these guys that everyone in the country is going after, is one, I don't think there's a single transfer in the portal that would lead Michigan in scoring. You know, with Caleb Houston, Musa Diabate, Hunter Dickinson literally led the team in scoring last season. So it's not like he's, I mean, it sounds like, feel pretty comfortable saying he's coming back. And so some of these guys, you know, think about Adam Miller. If it's ironic, because some of the blue bloods you're talking about, Kansas, Duke, Kentucky, you could argue North Carolina. I don't want to ruffle any feathers because I know the blue blood debate is always up there, but like someone like Michigan State, I mean, there are programs that are in more dire need of a top scorer than Michigan that have, you know, this is the same appeal, the legendary coaches, the regular success. Virginia is actually another school. You know, they've lost a lot of guys to the portal. So, you know, there's a lot of Chris Beard at Texas is another guy. I got to think he'll be aggressive in the portal once he kind of gets settled in. So it's going to be fascinating to see, one, who Michigan reaches out to, but two, who also picks up the phone. Just because maybe, you know, Adam Miller, if he committed to Michigan tomorrow, I'd say he's probably going to be the number two or number three scorer on the team. And he might be looking for somewhere where he can be number one. He might have left Illinois due to just a personality fit or a change of scenery. But my guess is that he was not happy with Illinois, not interested in continuing to play there. And so then that brings up the other point is, and Juwan Howard's talked about this. I think he last talked about it after he won the National Coach of the Year for the AP. He had a press conference. I asked him about the transfers and he immediately went to, you can't just add guys to the locker room blindly. Like, you have to do a lot of research, a lot of homework, a lot of vetting. Kind of sounded like an NBA coach when he talked about it. Because it is, I mean, it's similar. It's a free agent. Some guys are only in it for themselves, and you have to decide, is that going to help your team or is it going to hurt your team? And that's not an implication toward anyone I put on my list, but that is the other part of it. So if you see some player, Michigan never reached out to them or whatever, perhaps there was some vetting involved, or there was some vetting from the player himself and said, I probably have a better opportunity to look to stand out on draft boards if I go somewhere else, somewhere that doesn't have a second team All-American big man already on the roster. So
I'm what do you think of that though? Do you agree with that logic? Do you think you have to be the number one guy to make be most attractive on NBA boards? I just don't like, that just seems like such a flawed thinking, you know?
I mean,
you can't be too far down the pecking order. Don't get me wrong, but if an Adam Miller came in next year, say he committed to Michigan, and let's say he was the second or third leading scorer on the team, played good all around basketball. I agree, it is how it goes. I just think it's such an interesting line of thing. Like, being the man, is that, you know, always necessarily going to get you the most shine from the NBA? I don't know. I just say it's interesting. So,
a couple things. You're right, because Franz Wagner was Michigan's number three scorer, and he's going to be based on latest mock drafts, a lottery pick. So there is something to be said for that. But when I see someone like Trae Young puts up 21 shots a game, I mean, it's easier to stand out if you score a lot of points and if you're the leading scorer a lot. Because you're right. I mean, an NBA player is going to show themselves an NBA player at Michigan. But if you are, I don't know, Mac McClung, and you go from 15 points per game on a pretty good Texas Tech team. I mean, it's not like they were a nobody. I think they were top 20 in KenPom. I don't know where they were in the other rankings, but and then you come to Michigan, you average 11 points per game or 10. I think your draft stock gets hurt a little bit. I don't think anyone's like looking at a direct loss in production and being like, well, now I want that guy even more. You know, so it's just, I think I'm not speaking to someone like a Shondi Brown or Mike Smith necessarily, because I think those are players that needed to show that they could do it on a good team. But I'm thinking of someone like, I guess we could use Marcus Carr as an example, 19.5 points for Minnesota. If he comes to Michigan and averages 11.1 points per game, and he's getting a lot of passes to Hunter Dickinson, I have to think that hurts his draft stock. It certainly, and you also have to factor in, he's a year older. He probably could have scored 20 points per game at a tournament team somewhere else. So I can see where your point is sound. Being a great player on a good team, on a great team, is really valuable. And you'll have an opportunity to show what you can do over 31 games. But averaging 18 points a night for a fine team might get you noticed a little bit more. And I would say the evidence of that is all these first-round picks that come out of Washington, all these first-round picks that come out of LSU, all these first-round picks that come out of, you know, insert, I don't know, Oklahoma, they go up and down, I guess, as a team, but think about Oklahoma State. They're another team that just had a guy score a bajillion points a game. And so, it's something every player is going to look at, though, I think, and make their own decision. But I think with some players, Michigan's going to struggle just because they have a good team already. And that helps Michigan because they can be picky in the portal. But it also hurts Michigan because they're not like, we desperately need someone to score points for us or someone to put up a lot of shots for us. And so, as far as the guys on the list, I'm very intrigued by Pickett. I think he's someone 6'4", played, you know, for strong AAU and high school teams, has done it 3 years in a row. He's not a flash in the pan. He's someone I'm very intrigued by. Obviously, a lot of teams that aren't Michigan are also intrigued by it, by him. Bradley and Bolton are two guys. I think if Michigan does its homework and concludes, you know, they pass the test of this will work in our locker room and this will work in what Michigan's trying to accomplish on the court, I think they're two underrated guys. Obviously, everyone talks about Marcus Carr. Adam Miller is someone who a lot of people immediately were like, would Michigan be interested right after he hit the portal? That would be a fascinating storyline, though, if he was interested in Michigan, just because of all the back and forth. I mean, I think he even joined in a little bit on the social media, like against Michigan and pro Illinois during that like two week rivalry, whatever that was. What do you think of Jacob Young? I think he's someone that actually makes a lot of sense for Michigan. Just the way he plays defense, the way he's able to be a distributor. I think the fact that he has done it in the Big Ten, maybe not at Marcus Carr's level, but at a pretty good level. I think on that entire list, I think Jacob Young is the name that stands out to me. Obviously, age is something to consider. He is looking for a business degree, and I don't know if Michigan's ever had an athlete getting an MBA at the same time, at least not in the modern era. So that would be interesting. I know they have a master's in management program as well, but seems like he could be an academic fit or academically interested in Michigan as well. So that's probably the guy that stands out to me the most, at least among those point guards or, you know, one or two guard type guys that I listed on the list. He seemed pretty good. Any additional thoughts on these guys?
If Young was to play for Michigan, Michigan would immediately become this most disliked team, if they're not already, because he likes to yap a lot. If I remember watching Rutgers, he'd bring a lot of energy, right, on both ends of the floor. He's one, reminds me a little bit of Carr, plays a little bit like Michigan might have to rein him in a little bit on the offensive end, I feel like.
Okay.
You know how I feel about Marcus Carr. Marcus Carr, I think, could be one of the two or three best players in the Big Ten, but just goes through spurts taking highly questionable shots. And
They did have some injuries in his defense.
I know, but even last year, like, it wasn't just a this year thing, though. I mean, I felt like he's a guy. I liked watching him play, but just – I know a good Minnesota fan or a guy that used to be a writer in our network, you know, I messaged him once, like, how do you feel about Marcus Carr? And he's like, makes me want to pull it. Love him, but he makes me want to pull my hair out sometimes. And, like,
he reminds me of when you're playing, like, a video game and you, like, want your guy to score a lot of points.
Yeah, no.
And so you put him in all these high degree difficulty situations.
100%. Yeah. And so Young, I don't think quite the same, but I think a little bit, though, offensively. I think he's a guy that forces things, but defensively he's excellent. I mean, you said leading steal guy in the Big Ten, but just also a great defender. And you can never have enough good perimeter defenders, let alone a veteran of his ability. So, I think he's another one right up there as being the best, maybe the best fit. I just think, like I said, I think if anything, offensively, you know, it'd be interesting to see how Michigan kind of molded him and got him into the mix from an offensive standpoint, because I think he'd have a little bit to work on there.
Yeah, fair enough. And he's another guy that's getting a lot of interest. I know his dad was a legend at Houston. He's from the Houston area as well. So perhaps one of those Texas teams tries to reach out. But anyway, that's going to do our point guard discussion. On the other side, we'll be much quicker with the other positions just because there's a little bit less transfer urgency. Spoiler alert. We're going to hit a quick break. We'll be back with more on the other side. You're listening to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the plague.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown. New season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
And welcome back. Thanks for waiting. So at the two guard, Eli Brooks is the potential returnee. I think of all the players, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong here, I believe he's the one Michigan has been the most confident, or I would say the rumor mill has been the most confident that he would return. Certainly not a done deal. I mean, there's so many factors to consider. My understanding is he's going to have a degree this spring. So he would have to select and pursue a master's degree. He's been a two-year starter. His remarkably similar stats these 2 years. So if he came back, I think it would be to be a captain, to enjoy kind of a true senior season in the sense of fans in the stands and that whole deal. It would be because he wants to, not necessarily because he's like, I don't think it would help his pro stock. I don't think it would help his, NBA draft stock or anything like that. It would be because he wants to be a part of it for another season. But he would be a huge player to bring back. Seems like fans have finally fully come around on him as like a leader, a true blue guy, you know, really gritty, really good defender, pretty good shooter, you know, pretty good. I don't think point guard was like, I think he might think more highly of it than maybe an outsider, but seemed like he was a little bit more comfortable on with you in that two guard role, that catch and shoot role. Even if he doesn't come back though, Steve, I feel like Michigan has to like what it has still on the roster. I mean, especially Kobe Bufkin. Yeah, I think he's someone that can make an immediate impact. I think he was number 43 in the 2021 recruiting rankings. He was a McDonald's All-American. And then Zeb Jackson, you know, who actually already has a year of college experience, a former top 100 recruit, 6'5", which is pretty good length for a two-guard position. So I guess the one question I would have, and I did include some other guards. I think Matt Bradley was one of them. Mike Nuga from Kent State. And then obviously I had a few names at the bottom that I was intrigued by. Does Michigan need a transfer to replace Shondi Brown? I mean, looking at this roster, you know, a couple guys who at the two guard position who did not play very much, is Jace Howard and Adrian Nunez. Hard to tell what they would look like next season. So they're actually a little thin at guard, even just beyond the point guard situation with Shondi Brown's departure. Is it thin enough to pursue a transfer there, or with Bufkin and Jackson and the, I would say slightly above 50-50 possibility, Brooks returns, maybe like a 60-40, 70-30. Is Michigan relatively content at guard, outside of point guard, the other guard spot, in your opinion?
Feels like it. I mean, I think as it goes with, the transfer portal much newer into last year for basketball, like football, we've talked about it maybe a little bit longer. I always look at it as like, if you can improve your roster, then you take the opportunity, but it doesn't, that doesn't mean you reach. And this is it's a spot where, yeah, I mean, it feels like this is where you've recruited a pretty high level mm-hmm. of player at this position the last couple classes. And that's the benefit of recruiting as well as they have, is these guys should be able to make an impact, you know, whether it's Zeb or Kobe Bufkin, should be able to get something from those guys with maybe a higher ceiling than what you've had in the past, if things work out, right? I mean, yeah, Bufkin, a top 50 player who really, sometimes you wonder with those, like he rose
consistently near the end, you kind of wonder, he might be even better than one of the 45 best players. He might have been closer to five-star range. You know, it's one of those, if they had kept ranking guys, you know, he may have continued to move up. So there is that. So from my standpoint, not a spot where I think it's super pressing necessarily, right? Probably on the lower end of the five positions.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the big question is Michigan knows this better than we do because he did not play very much. I mean, Zeb Jackson averaged 1.0 points per game. That's not, I mean, that's less than Charles Matthews averaged at Kentucky. So, and that's not a dig at Zeb. It's just the fact of the matter is I can't sit here and say, I know Zeb will be blank. And so if Eli Brooks comes back, you don't necessarily go get a guard. I think you look more toward a wing, like a 6'6 guy. But I think the big question is, what did you see from Zeb Jackson this season in practice? And is the potential there? Is there a path to him being a true starter level, if not starter, first or second guy off the bench level player consistently next season? Because you do need someone to come off the bench. I don't think that's why they lost to UCLA, but, you know, I think I'd argue that that was one of Michigan's weaknesses this season, is they had one or two guys that could come off the bench, and everyone else was a significant drop off. So I think you take a look, and I'm with you. I mean, you might as well make some phone calls. It only increases the odds that your team is better. You know, someone like Timmy Allen from Utah. I mean, yeah, you don't have to put all your chips, or you don't have to like go all in, but you might as well make a phone call. If he's interested, then you see what's next. And if he's not, then you head down the list. Iowa State's Jalen Coleman Lance was someone that was interested in Michigan last season, ended up going to Iowa State, scored 14.2 points per game. He'd be a seventh year guy. He turns 25 in July. But you know, UNLV's Bryce Hamilton, is another guy. I mean, I think it's worth asking, but I don't think that's a position where you take a true shot on a mid-major guy who might not be as productive as you thought. Maybe you do if you really like what they can do on film, but I think that's a spot where you kind of, and by a spot, we're talking a little bit about the two and the three here. I think it is a spot where you try to find a mid-major guy who wants to win and score points. I mean, cause that's what you need. It's a scoring. They need a little bit more scoring there. Could use a little bit of experience. And that's speaking of both Zeb and Kobe Bufkin, because I think combined they have less than 200 minutes of college basketball experience. So, I think there's room to, but I think it's more of a, you call the guys you really like and see what they say. At the three position, kind of the wing role, Franz Wagner, I fully expect him to depart. That's kind of more of a when he announces, not an if, at least in my estimation. But he's projected to be a top 15 pick by pretty much everybody. So clearly, I would expect him to go. Caleb Houston has kind of been cited as the starter at the three, and he's a very good shooter. He's 6'8", 215 pounds. Probably as college ready as it gets. Played several years at Montverde, the prep school. So seems like he could kind of jump right in and fill that Franz Wagner, Isaiah Livers role. But behind him, I mean, this is where Michigan is in a tricky spot, because it's very hard to recruit guys and say, come to our school, you'll come off the bench. Don't go to that school where you'd be a starter. Come here and come off the bench. But there are so many players in the transfer portal I almost wonder if this is a spot where maybe Michigan lets the dust settle a little bit, sees what they have in someone like Isaiah Barnes, who I know you're very high on, Steve. See what you have. I mean, Terrence Williams is more of a four, but could probably play the three. So I think it's somewhere maybe Michigan waits a little bit and sees if they can get a guy who wants to be a part of a winning team. You know, they might not score even 8 points a game, but they want to be a part of a winning team. They want to help with the depth. What are your thoughts on the three position?
Pretty much the same as you. Houston. Yeah, most game-ready guy that they recruited, which, I mean, he's the highest-ranked guy, but, like, he's game-ready from, like, not, like, how do you say it, like, from just not just being super talented, if that makes sense. Like, it's just he plays a very cerebral brand of ball for being a five-star. I think when I talked about him before, like, his highlight video isn't just him dunking all over everybody for 2.5 minutes. Like, he's a good defender. He's a leader on an uber-talented high school team. And is a guy that, like I said, I thought played the type of basketball that Juwan Howard is going to love, as far as a guy who makes the extra pass, not a guy out hunting for stats. You know, just seems like a guy consistently. You know, he kind of reminded me of, and I don't know if this is something that was – maybe I read this somewhere else or something, but it's something that kind of – he kind of reminds me of a Shane Battier type guy.
Okay.
You know, as a just, you know, Battier was how he played the game in college. Mm-hmm. Kind of gives me a little bit of that vibe. He won't stay 4 years like Battier did at Duke, or I don't know how much, maybe Battier stayed three or whatever, but either way, kind of reminds me of him a little bit. And again, not saying that that's the impact he makes right away next year, but I just think as a guy that shows a lot of that, the intangible side of the game. And that's why, yeah. But either way, like you said, besides that, it's hard to say. I am very high on Isaiah Barnes also, but, you know, it's hard to know, you know, if he can be an immediate impact guy as well. Also, you know, he's a guy that might be next year type deal, but
has to be the most mysterious, maybe overstates it, but he has to be the recruit in this class that maybe has the highest variance, because he was a late rising recruit. I mean, he like blew up during the pandemic. You know, obviously there wasn't a ton of AAU opportunities to kind of see what he looks like against top competition. He played for Simeon in Chicago, but they also didn't start to get to play until well after he had already signed with Michigan. And so, and obviously having that long of an offseason can be really difficult. So yeah, he's very fascinating, because I think sometimes Chicago guys, I think Ayo Dosunmu clearly was underrated. I know he was a top 40 recruit, but he wasn't a five-star. So clearly he was some of those underrated. I think sometimes just because, you know, it's not the same kind of like as all the national prep schools, there aren't quite as many teams that play national schedules. I think sometimes Chicago players, similar actually to Detroit players sometimes, I think can get a little overlooked in the recruiting rankings. But he's someone that's very fascinating. And obviously if he's good, so they have Houston kind of as the immediate starter, and then Barnes is kind of the number two guy, then maybe they're in good shape. But there's a lot of good wings in the portal. Steve, 1 to 10, how hard do you look for a transfer to maybe help give you some experience there?
4 or 5.
Okay.
Right. Somewhere in the middle.
Similar, maybe a little bit higher than the guard position.
Yep. Keep your ear to the ground, but don't reach, because you do have a lot of talent there.
Yeah. So at the four position, I think they're good. I don't think we have to spend a ton of time on it. I mean, Brandon Johns looked like a starter caliber power forward. I think Houston can play that position with his size and length. Musa Djibadi, another five-star guy. I don't know what Michigan views him, if he's a true small ball big man, or if he's kind of the in the Brandon Johns role. But he can play there. Terrence Williams can play there. Feels like that's one spot where they're probably not even going to look in the portal. I mean, I guess maybe you always take a peek, but feels like one spot where they're good. And that's even with the Isaiah Livers loss. You know, I would expect him to go. I mean, that might be one of the easiest decisions. Maybe he takes a second guess to pause and think about if he wants another NCAA tournament, but I wouldn't expect that to be the case. I would give it like a 0 out of 10 transfer portal for the four position.
Yep. I agree. Not much to say there.
Okay. Last one where it gets in a little interesting, and perhaps you and I disagree. I don't know if we're on the same page, but the center position, this is where, I mean, you're obviously not recruiting a starting center because Hunter Dickinson is a starting center. I mean, he's probably the most sure thing on the entire team heading into next season. But if Austin Davis does not return for what would be a sixth season, which, I mean, I don't know the nature of his master's degree program, he might be out of things to study. that's the weird part about this COVID additional year thing is like, it's really changing a lot of the academic plans some of these players had. And so, I mean, if he's already got an undergrad degree and a master's degree, I mean, I think he's a movement science major. They might literally not have anything else for him to do. I guess he could start working on his PhD, but yeah, it's, if he does not return, I think Michigan goes up to eight, even though Austin Davis was never going to start. He wasn't ever going to be a star player for Michigan. I think suddenly Michigan has to look really hard at a center in the transfer portal, which is tricky because again, you're basically saying, come be the backup to a guy we expect to play 30 minutes a night. But I think a backup center is a very important position. It's kind of like a third string running back almost. I mean, maybe even a second string running back where even if you have an All-American, they can't play every minute. They get into foul trouble. They get tired. They have, you know, tough matchups where they're exhausted every play. So I think suddenly there's a big need. And I think that's where I'd be very interested to see how Michigan approaches it, because that's where it probably would be a mid-major guy who wants to be a part of a winning team, who might not even be a starter caliber player, but maybe you can just get 5 or 8, 10 minutes from him. So I think there's a relative importance because I think it's unfair to Brandon Johns. I think it's unfair to Musa Diabate to have them play both positions. If they come in and they say, coaches, I want to be a five. I want to be a backup big man. I want that backup center role. Then great. Then you have it. But my guess is they want to play a little bit more of a power forward role. And if that's the case, I think it's very difficult for someone to continue to learn both the way Michigan runs things, the way what they ask out of both positions are two very different things. You know, credit to Brandon Johns for kind of coming alive in the Isaiah Livers role, but there were some ups and downs, I guess, with that when he was playing the backup five. So yeah, I think it becomes maybe the second most important place to add a transfer if Davis leaves. If he comes back, then you're basically running back the same thing and you're adding a five star, so you don't do anything. But if he departs, I think Michigan, I'd give it like a 7 out of 10 to look for a transfer there.
That'd be the second most important spot, right? Have to give somebody some Dickinson will need relief. If there's nobody behind him that's worth anything, teams are just going to attack, get him in foul trouble, and which they're probably going to anyway. You know, and
yeah, true.
Push to the bench. But yeah, I mean, backup center is massive. Like, you know, Davis played such a bigger role for Michigan. It was way more than what he put in the box score, right? I mean, those minutes are so valuable to not just give your star center rest, but yeah, to keep him out of foul trouble, allow them to play aggressively throughout the game, right? You know, because if you're in foul trouble, you got to play tentatively, or your whole game, the way you play on both ends of the floor has to change a little bit. So, you know, that's where it's paramount. You know, if Davis leaves, that's a spot. Yeah, they're really going to have to look hard, I feel like.
Yeah, I am counting 14 games where Dickinson, as good as he was, played fewer than 25 minutes. And I think I'm only counting 5 games. If I missed one or two, then I did. But only 5 games where he played at least 30 minutes. So, yeah, you need a backup center. And that was true under John Beilein. Definitely true under Juwan Howard. You could argue you need a third string center. I think they have one in between Musa and Brandon. They probably have one, but yeah, I think if Davis does not come back, and I don't think you need like a 5-star guy. I don't think you need like the top center transfer, right? But you need someone who's going to come in, do work, probably want someone with some size. And you also want someone who's going to help get the most out of Hunter Dickinson. Because, I mean, he has Big Ten Player of the Year potential. Maybe has National Player of the Year potential. I hadn't really thought about it before, but he probably does. He was a second team All-American as a freshman. So you want someone that's going to push him and help him in practice too. But you also want someone who can help you win basketball games if Dickinson runs into foul trouble. It happens to literally every center. So anyway, that was the position by position look. Steve, I know we went one by one. Is there anything else you want to mention or anything else that you missed?
Not really. I think okay. We pretty much went through it, what we needed to do.
Obviously, this will be something pretty fluid. We'll add updates when there are updates to be added. I guess one question I had, are you surprised Michigan has not been linked to anyone yet? Is that, I mean, I'm a little surprised because Mike Smith, I think he declared Friday, Michigan probably had a feeling a couple days before that. I'm a little surprised Michigan hasn't been connected to, you know, because people tweets, transfer, Joe Schmo transfer has heard from this school, you know, all these different schools. Michigan, I think they were linked to Fats Russell during like early March. He ended up committing to Maryland. I'm a little surprised I haven't seen Michigan connected to anybody. Obviously that can change literally between now and when I publish the podcast, but are you a little surprised that Michigan hasn't even seemingly reached out at all so far?
Yeah, we haven't seen or heard Michigan for literally anybody yet, right?
Yeah.
Usually, at least, maybe you'd see them like on the laundry list of like 18 teams that have contacted like player A, right? Like that's usually.
Well, players will mention Michigan because it's a really good way for them to get followers and kind of get a little bit more buzz in their recruitment.
But I don't feel like we've even seen that, have we?
Not. Yeah, right. Just Fats Russell, which who had the Phil Martelli connection. But yeah, nobody sense.
Right. So yeah, no, pretty surprised. Cause you think a lot of these decisions are going to be made. It won't be a huge waiting game on a lot of these. So
no, not at all. I mean, I actually had a guy, Xavier Pinson from Missouri was actually one of the players that was initially on my list. And literally as I was formatting it and publishing it, he committed to LSU. He's originally from Chicago, played for Missouri, thought he actually checked a lot of the boxes for Michigan, and he committed to LSU before I could even write the story. So I guess we'll see. I have to think eventually they'll get involved. If we're talking about this in 2 weeks and they still haven't reached out to anybody, I think then it's fair to wonder, is Michigan slow playing it more than they should? But for now, obviously, it's still pretty early. I think they still are awaiting official decisions on Austin Davis and Eli Brooks, neither of which will count against the scholarship limit. By the way, I've meant to mention this at the top. They have one scholarship opening if Franz Wagner departs. So maybe that's another domino they're waiting to fall too. But they have one scholarship opening if Franz Wagner leaves. If any players transfer or depart, then obviously they would have more. But Eli Brooks and Austin Davis would not count against the scholarship limit. So that's not part of it. Maybe if I'm thinking, putting myself in Michigan's shoes, maybe they do want to wait till Franz formally declares or gives his indication that he's going to declare before you start reaching out. But yeah, it's going to be a situation to monitor because we're all writing these stories and doing these podcasts about who might come in. And to our knowledge, Michigan hasn't gone after anybody yet. So stay tuned to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast and also the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan.247sports.com. I'll probably end up doing transfer stories every time there's enough content to do one, just because it's such a hot discussion right now. Our message board has a little bit more of an insider look. Guys, Michigan has at least kicked the tires on, even if they haven't formally reached out. A couple names to keep an eye on, and obviously more as things go on. For Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. Hope you had fun. Hope you learned something. We'll see you next time.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.